Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloudonaut podcast. My name is Michael.
And my name is Andreas.
We are brothers and freelancers focusing on Amazon Web Services. We do technical coaching, for example, for teams that start their journey with AWS, and infrastructure bootstrapping, typically based on our infrastructure as code templates, for our clients worldwide. Every other week, we discuss a topic related to AWS in this podcast. One of us prepares the topic, which is not known to the other one. So the question is, what's the subject today, Andreas?
Yeah, Michael. So today we will talk about how to scale container clusters on AWS and how to do so for the ECS, the Elastic Container Service, as well as EKS, the Elastic Kubernetes Service. So how to make sure that you have enough compute capacity available for your containers.
Okay, so I think we are going a little bit into the details if I understand you correctly, but before we get started, can you give a short explanation of what's the difference between ECS and EKS?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so first of all, I think, as we all know, containers are a very powerful tool to streamline your development and deployment process. But a container cluster, so a cluster of EC2 instances that you deploy your containers to, adds a lot of complexity to your infrastructure, because you're no longer only managing virtual machines, but on top now, you have to manage containers as well. But still, you have to manage the virtual machines. So you have basically two problems now when deploying your applications as a container to a container cluster. So instead of only scaling virtual machines, you need to scale containers. You have to think about how to do patching, updating of those machines, and so on. So that's basically what we will talk about today. So, and the difference between ECS and EKS, to come back to your question, so the Elastic Container Service is a fully managed container cluster management service offered by AWS. We can use it for free, so we only pay for the compute resources that we use. The downside of ECS is you can only use it on AWS. It's a solution that is only available on AWS. And the Elastic Kubernetes Service basically brings the popular open source cluster management to AWS. So what we get from AWS is a managed control plane for your Kubernetes cluster. This is a good thing, because managing that your own is a complete other story. So basically you get a fully managed cluster control plane management from AWS with EKS, which is a great approach. So the only downside, I would say, of EKS is it costs you around $80 per month per cluster. And you typically need more than one cluster, because you should not deploy multiple workloads to the same cluster because of isolation problems.
Okay, Andreas, I understand. So you already mentioned that there are two different approaches on AWS, so ECS and EKS. So what are the solutions that AWS offers for the problems that you mentioned? So how can we make our lives easier to scale the cluster? So what options are available?
Yeah. So the thing is, what we need to run our containers is we need a compute infrastructure. So at the end, you need some servers where you can place your containers on. So one thing that we can do is we can spin up EC2 instances. And AWS offers some tools that we will dive into soon that help us to do so. So that help us to automate the process of spinning up and managing EC2 instances. But before we dive into those details, which is what we will talk about today, I want to mention that there is a complete other approach that you can use with both ECS and EKS, which is AWS Fargate. And Fargate is a fully managed and scalable container infrastructure offered by AWS, and you don't need to manage virtual machines anymore at all. So with Fargate, ACS and AKS can launch containers directly on the machines and the infrastructure that is operated by AWS. So we can remove virtual machines from our infrastructure, from our architecture completely, which decreases complexity significantly. So therefore, I highly recommend to use Fargate instead of EC2 instances in your container clusters whenever possible. Unfortunately, there are a few showstoppers for Fargate. So Fargate is newish, so it's around for some years, but it's still, I would say, early days. So there are a few, few reasons why you probably cannot use Fargate. So one is, for example, Fargate for AKS is only available in 8 of 22 regions. Fargate for AKS only supports the application load balancer as a load balancer type. Then both Fargate AKS and ECS offer a maximum of 4 CPUs and 30 gigabyte memory per container or per group of containers, which is called task or pods. And also, sometimes important, Fargate does not provide specialized hardware. So you won't find memory optimized, storage optimized, GPUs, whatever, with Fargate. So basically you get a standard virtual machine underneath. So no special, no way to reuse specialized hardware here. And last but not least, the pricing options to reduce costs are limited. So that's especially true for Fargate with AKS, but also compared to running your own EC2 instances and the spot market there and the reserved instance or savings plans there. The options that you have with Fargate are more limited. So that might be a few options why using Fargate is not an option for you. And then we are back to spinning up EC2 instances and managing a cluster. And that's what we want to talk about today.
Okay, great. So I can also highly recommend using Fargate. So it's basically a way to run Docker containers without thinking about the infrastructure. So that's really cool. And you can access Fargate over the ECS or the EKS API. So you can basically decide how you want to use it, but it's always running your containers, so that's really cool. Okay, Andreas, so I think it's time to start with what kind of options we have for running or scaling on if you run on EC2, if you cannot use Fargate.
Yeah, so I want to dive into three different options to manage your container cluster, which means tools that AWS offers or approaches that you can use to scale and manage EC2 instances for your ECS or for your AKS cluster. And we will have a look at three different options. So we will start with ECS with cluster autoscaling. So cluster autoscaling is a feature that AWS announced at the end of last year. And it's basically a feature that helps us to scale and manage our EC2 instances. Because this approach has some downsides, I will also talk about a do-it-yourself solution for scaling ECS clusters based on CloudWatch events and metrics. And the third option we will talk about is how to do cluster management when using AKS, so when using Kubernetes. We will have a look at the Kubernetes cluster autoscaler and manage node groups. So those are the three options that we want to dive into and have a deeper look at. Are you ready for that, Michael? Or any questions before we start?
No, I'm ready. So I think we start with ECS and the new autoscaling mechanism.
Yeah. So AWS announced the so-called cluster autoscaling for ECS in December 2019. So this was a huge improvement because before that, there was basically no built-in way to scale the number of EC2 instances for your ECS cluster. So the default way that basically AWS was recommending through their management console and everywhere is they were creating an autoscaling group that were spinning up EC2 instances with the optimized Amazon machine image for ECS. But the cluster, the autoscaling group, was static. It was not increasing or decreasing the desired capacity automatically. it was just static. And this was, of course, frustrating a little bit because you could not spin up containers and turn down containers as you wanted. The cluster size kept the same at all times, so you had problems with scaling up, but also, of course, with scaling down, which is at least has at least the same importance as scaling up. So Michael, you and I, we came up with an approach. We had some, basically with some lambda functions and stuff, we tried to solve that problem to be able to scale up the cluster automatically. And it was always kind of hacky and not really the best solution you would really want to when running such things in production. It kind of worked, but it was very limited to come up with your own solution. So it was very cool, and I was really happy to hear that AWS was tackling that problem with cluster auto-scaling. And then, as always, when AWS announces a new feature nowadays, the first thing I found out when I wanted to test cluster auto-scaling was it's not supported in CloudFormation. and so I thought, okay, I will come back to cluster auto-scaling as soon as they launch CloudFormation support for that feature, which hasn't happened until today, by the way. So almost half a year later, still waiting for CloudFormation support. And so I had a deeper look in how cluster auto-scaling works and was thinking about building the infrastructure with Terraform. And I had a look into how cluster auto-scaling works. And then I found out a few problems with cluster auto-scaling. But let me start from the beginning. So how does ECS with cluster auto-scaling work? So first of all, AWS announced a new feature for ECS, which is called capacity providers. And the thing with capacity providers is AWS also introduced a new, or they extended the lifecycle for an ECS task. So just to get that quickly, an ECS task is a group of containers that you want to launch on the same machine. So it could be only one container, it could be multiple containers that you want to run together, for example, sidecar containers, stuff like that. The capacity provider also introduced a new state that an ECS task can go through in its lifecycle, and this is called provisioning. So which means when you have a capacity provider configured for your ECS cluster, when you create a new task, it will go into state provisioning until there is an EC2 instance or a Fargate resource available to schedule that container, that task. So that is new, and this is important to be able to scale up because now you have some time. Basically, you have a queue of containers that want to start, and you now have time to scale up your EC2 instances. That's basically a new concept that was not something that was not possible before.
Okay, I see. So the behavior before was that when I launched a task, and by the way, if you are familiar with the Kubernetes terminology, the task is basically the pod. So if you wanted to launch a task on ECS before that change, and there was no capacity available in the cluster, it just failed. And now the task stays in the provisioning state and waits for some time on hoping that capacity will increase and it can be launched.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if I remembered correctly, the timeout for that is 30 minutes. And it works for both. It works for tasks that are started out of a service. It also works for tasks that you create kind of manually by calling the API. So in both approaches are covered here, which is great. So that is one important aspect of the new cluster auto-scaling feature. Okay, so the second aspect is the cluster auto-scaling also writes a new CloudWatch metric, which is named Capacity Provider Reservation. And that basically is a metric that tracks the utilization of your ECS cluster or the overcapacity or undercapacity in your cluster. And cluster auto-scaling uses that metric to scale your auto-scaling group. So they have a tracking policy that, for example, tries to achieve 100% cluster utilization, which basically means that you only have as many EC2 instances as you need to run your task and no overcapacity. But you can configure that if you want to. You can have overcapacity if you want to maybe improve the or reduce the latent or the time it takes to spin up a new task in your cluster. So that is the other thing, that capacity provider reservation metric that they then use with a tracking scaling policy to scale down and scale up the autoscaling group. So basically increase or decrease the desired capacity. And the idea is that this works without affecting any other interactions with your autoscaling group. So in theory, you could still have other autoscaling mechanisms in place that kind of work together with that way of scaling the cluster. So this is important. So I have to mention before we go deeper into that, so there is a blog post from AWS, which is called Deep Dive on Amazon ECS Cluster Autoscaling. So this is where AWS describes in detail how they calculate the capacity provider reservation metric, how everything works with scaling in detail. So if you're interested in more details, then we will discuss now, check out that link that you will find in the show notes to this podcast episode. So we have discussed now, we have that new feature with the new ECS task state, which is provisioning. We have a new metric that we can use to scale. So there's a few more things, but before I go on, Michael, do we have any questions so far?
So I have one question. So you mentioned that the task now goes into the provisioning state before it is launched. So is there a way for users of ECS to hook into this process? So like for the autoscaling group, we have these hooks, like lifecycle hooks, they are called, I think. So is there something like this in ECS? So can I, like if a task is in the provisioning state, is there some way for me to do something, or how does it work?
So I couldn't find anything related to that. So I looked for some ways to basically build my own capacity provider or something like that, but I couldn't find a way to do so. Maybe I missed something, but I could not find anything. So if you know, if our listeners know something that I haven't seen, please leave us a comment or write us an email. But I don't think there is such a thing, unfortunately. Scaling out your cluster, so increasing the number of EC2 instances now works. So we have the new state, we have the capacity provider reservation, and based on that, the tracking policy can basically scale out a cluster, increase the number of EC2 instances. And now the other way around is important. So how do we scale in? How do we remove EC2 instances from our ECS cluster? And this is where it gets interesting. So because first of all, the first thing is that I didn't expect is as long as there is a single task running on an ECS instance, on an EC2 instance, ECS will not try to reduce the number of EC2 instances in the cluster. So the metric capacity provider reservation will not reflect an overcapacity as long as you have a single task running on each machine. Also, if that task only uses a very small fraction of that machine, the ECS capacity provider and cluster autoscaling will not even try to scale in, so to reduce the number of EC2 instances. So this is this might be a good thing when you look at it from an AWS perspective. I'm kidding. So the idea behind that is, AWS has written down their design goals for their cluster autoscaling, and their design goal is they don't want to interrupt running ECS tasks under no circumstances. So when you think about that in from that direction, it makes sense that you do not even try to reduce the number of EC2 instances in the cluster as long as there is a single task running on the machine. So that's That's just a design decision from the very beginning. So that's one thing. So, but when there is an instance in our ECS cluster that runs no containers, that runs no single tasks, and there are no tasks in the queue to be scheduled on an EC2 instances, then that will be reflected in the capacity provider reservation metric, and then the autoscaling crypto tracking policy will decrease the number of desired instances. So that's the mechanism how scaling in works. There's one additional feature here that is kind of interesting, and this is you can enable a feature that uses termination protection for your EC2 instances in the autoscaling group. So basically, that's a feature of autoscaling groups in general. So you can mark certain instances in your autoscaling group to be not terminated by the autoscaling group. So you enable termination protection for some of your instances or all of your instances in the autoscaling group, and then the autoscaling group will not terminate those instances, even if the desired capacity is, for example, much lower than the actual running instances. And the cluster autoscaling for ECS uses that feature and marks all instances that have running tasks, running containers, with a termination protection flag. So what that means, the autoscaling group will make sure that the autoscaling group will only terminate an EC2 instances without any running tasks. So that is, again, coming from their design goal. They want to make sure that no task gets interrupted because of a downscaling action in the cluster. So that sounds like a good idea at the beginning, but it introduces some problems. Because when you have machines that are marked as with termination protection, you can also not use stuff like rolling updates for an autoscaling group from CloudFormation, for example, because CloudFormation cannot terminate those instances as well. Also, if you try to delete the autoscaling group, if you try to make any changes to your infrastructure, stuff like that, with infrastructure as code, this will all not work because those instances are marked as do not terminate under all circumstances. And so that basically causes problems, especially, I think, if you use infrastructure as code, as code approaches to manage your infrastructure. And the other thing that is, I think, very important is you cannot downscale your cluster as far as you could, because as long as there's one single task running on a machine, you will not be able to downscale your cluster.
Okay, so I think I can try to summarize this to make sure that I understand everything correctly. So everything is kind of related to this design goal that you mentioned, that the ECS capacity provider team, or however they are called, think that it's a good idea to never interrupt a running task. And because of that, you basically lose lots of flexibility. So that's interesting, because I'm not sure if someone expects a container to run forever. So I wouldn't. That's interesting that this is the design goal. But if you keep this in mind, it also makes sense that they don't support rolling updates, because it would also interrupt the workload. The question is, how does it work without updating the cluster? But So I'm not sure if that design goal makes or is like a good goal to have. But okay, so I see. So I think if this is the goal, then it makes sense. But I'm not sure if that's a good goal.
So at least from my perspective, I don't understand that design decision. There might be AWS customer probably that need that behavior for some reasons, because maybe they have a more static ECS cluster. Maybe if you have a more traditional approach of managing your infrastructure, maybe then it's important. I don't know. But I also think it's a little bit unusual, let's say, to use containers in such a way. But that's how it is. Yeah, that's the design decisions. And I think the most important problem here is really when you use ECS with cluster autoscaling in the current way it works with the current feature set, you will end up with a cluster with over-provisioned capacity. So we will pay much more for your EC2 instances than you really need to pay, because you will have a lot of instances probably running only very few, very small containers at the end. So of course, it depends on how you use bin packing when you launch your containers and stuff like that. So you can try to work around these limitations a little bit. But at the end, you will never be the most cost-effective. It will never be the most cost-effective way to run an ECS cluster. That's, I think, important to note. Yeah, because they will not try to scale in as long as there's a single task running on the machine. That's, I think, the biggest problem I have with ECS with cluster autoscaling. So when you read on GitHub and everywhere where they have their public container roadmap and so on, other customers are asking for that feature as well. And AWS has mentioned that they are thinking about how to fix that, how to implement that for customers that want to be able to scale in their clusters to a minimum. But that's the current feature set that we have. So we never know when that will change in the future.
What about this? Like I heard or I read somewhere that I'm not sure if this is for auto-scaling or the capacity providers, but the reason why it's not supported in CloudFormation seems to be that the API does only support creation and the create and read methods, basically. So they don't support update and delete, so that's why the automation cannot really work. So what's the story behind this design? Is this also a design goal? You can only create stuff, or
I have no idea, Michael. I don't know. It maybe it's just an early version of the whole thing. They just hadn't the time to implement update and delete. I don't know. It sounds simple, but you never know. Okay. But that's the state of ECS with cluster autoscaling, the new feature. So when you think about using it, maybe think twice if it really matches with your requirements for cluster autoscaler. Okay, so I was a little bit frustrated with that, and we had a consulting client that was asking for reducing the cluster size to a minimum to optimize costs. You know, it's coronavirus times, and everyone is trying to reduce costs to a minimum. And this was why I was thinking about, is there another approach to do a do-it-yourself solution for ECS cluster autoscaling? And so I mentioned before that, Michael, we both had a working solution in our open source CloudFormation templates before. This was using Lambda functions and calculating our own metric, basically a similar approach than what AWS is now doing. And we were scaling based on that metric and so on. And this was working kind of, it was kind of working. It had some problems. For example, we always needed a spare instance in the cluster, which was also introducing a lot of overcapacity. And I was thinking about another solution to that problem. And then I had a look at the features that had been announced in the last year for ECS, and I tried to come up with a new solution for the problem. And I found a solution for building do-it-yourself auto-scaling for ECS. And I want to dive a little bit deeper in how that could work. And I've also implemented a sample solution for that. So you will find a link to our open source CloudFormation templates in the show notes if you want to have a look into an implementation of this approach that you could use. So how does it work? So I'm using two mechanisms to scale the ECS cluster. So also I'm using the same approach. I'm using an auto-scaling group that spins up EC2 instances. Those register at the ECS cluster. So that's basically the same. But the question is now, how do I increase or decrease the desired capacity for my auto-scaling group? And to scale out, so to increase the number of machines, I'm using a new CloudWatch event. So an ECS service that tries to spin up a task and cannot do so because there is not enough capacity to start a new task on one of the EC2 instances, this task will now create and publish a CloudWatch event, which is called Service Task Placement Failure. So this is a CloudWatch event that we can use to scale out our cluster. So whenever we receive that event from our ECS cluster, from a service running in that cluster, we can just increase the number of EC2 instances by one. So this is a way to scale out.
I have one question here. So just to make sure that I get this right. So this event is fired if the placement failed. This doesn't mean that the task is in the provisioning state. It really means it has failed. Is this correct?
Yeah. So in that scenario, I'm not using the capacity provider. So I don't get this new ECS task state provisioning. So this is only available for ECS clusters with a capacity provider, which I don't use in my scenario. So I don't have that state. So this is also a limitation of my approach, of my DIY approach here, is it only works when you have ECS services. So if you start tasks only by ECS services, this approach works. If you start a task manually or by triggering the API, you will get a failure out of capacity and the task will not start.
Okay.
So in that case, you have to increase the capacity manually or something, but there's no automatic way in that case, in that scenario. So it only works for services, which is in many scenarios that we use ECS fine because we often only use as services to start tasks, but that's a limitation here.
Okay, and the reason why it works is that the ECS service tries new tasks, like if a task placement failed, they will retry, and that's why it works.
Exactly.
So if you start a task manually, like manually without an ECS service, if you use a step function that has retry, it will also work.
No, because then the CloudWatch event will never fire. So this really is only fired from the service. It's an event originating from the ECS service.
Okay, so that's why it's called Service Task Placement Failure. Okay, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Okay.
So yeah, it's really limited to that. So that's a way to scale out. So to make that work, what we need is we basically need a CloudWatch event rule that filters for those events only from a specific cluster, only with the specific type, the service task placement failure type. And then we need to trigger a Lambda function because that's the only way to modify an autoscaling group out of a CloudWatch event. So the way it works is we have the CloudWatch event rule. The event rule will trigger a Lambda function, and the Lambda function will then execute a scaling policy on the autoscaling group to increase the desired capacity. So that's basically the mechanism that we use here to scale out. Then the question is, how do we scale in? So I have used an approach that is not perfect. But it's the best solution I can came up with without adding too much complexity to the whole infrastructure template. So what I use to scale in is I'm using CloudWatch metrics, and I'm using three different metrics. So ECS publishes a CPU reservation and memory reservation metric. So this is a metric that you can use to find out the overcapacity in your cluster. And I'm using another metric that you have to enable. It's not enabled by default. You can enable metrics for autoscaling groups as well. And then you get a metric for example, the desired capacity of your autoscaling group. And with those three metrics, I can calculate, can I remove one instance from my cluster to reduce the overcapacity and still stay equal or below 100% capacity for CPU or memory reservation. So this is, as I said, it's not perfect, but it's close to perfect to be able to scale down. And so on the plus side, we only need the CloudWatch alarm with a little bit of metric math to get that working. And we trigger a scaling policy to reduce the desired capacity then.
Okay, so what's the reason why it's not perfect? So let me, like, my guess is that, I mean, there are circumstances because, I mean, a task needs a certain amount of memory and CPU, and there could be some fragmentation. So, for example, there could be 200 megabytes on every instance, but my task needs 250, so that's why I cannot put it on one of the available instances. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem here. So we had another implementation before that I basically removed from our open source template, which was really calculating the available memory and CPU on each machine and writing a metric based on that. This is, of course, much more accurate. But then you need to specify the smallest possible task that you want to place in your cluster, CPU and memory-wise. And then you can really make sure that you only scale in if you have enough, or if it's really possible. But then, you have other problems because then you probably have a little bit over-provisioning in your cluster because you have to specify it for the biggest task that you run. So it's also not perfect. So it's a DIY solution. So you probably need to adapt it to your scenario a little bit.
And as you mentioned, I mean, the goal here is really to be as efficient as possible. And so if this is not your goal, then that's not a good solution for you. So,
yeah, exactly. Then you can also use the cluster auto scaling that we discussed before. So there's one more thing that also differentiates the solution to the cluster auto scaling that AWS is doing. And this is now, how do we make sure that we do not interrupt tasks, or how do we make sure to make that as smooth as possible, so without causing any downtimes in production, basically. So how does that work? So this was a solution that we had in place before. So we are using auto-scaling lifecycle hooks. So when the auto-scaling policy was triggered and we scale down the number of EC2 instances, auto-scaling group will just randomly select, or basically I think it's always selecting the oldest instances by default. It will just select one instance in the cluster and will start terminating those instances. And then we have a lifecycle hook that basically kicks in. And the lifecycle hook that we are using is doing two important things. First of all, it tells the ECS cluster that we want to drain this EC2 instance from the cluster. And this is a built-in mechanism from ECS, and it tells the cluster to replace the tasks that are running on the EC2 instance with new tasks on the other remaining instances in the cluster. This only works for tasks that are managed by ECS services. So it doesn't work for tasks that you have started manually that are not monitored by an ECS service. As I said, it works for ECS services, and then the task will get replaced. So it starts new tasks on other machines. The cluster waits for those tasks to become ready and healthy, and then it removes the old tasks running on the machine that we want to terminate, that is in state draining now, and make sure that we are slowly removing those tasks from the machine. And now we have another thing in place. The auto-scaling lifecycle hook waits until there is no more running task on the machine. And you can configure a timeout for this that can be up to 24 hours. So we can wait up to 24 hours to terminate that machine. And that is, for example, if you have started a manual task on the machine, then if that task finishes within 24 hours, then basically you won't even have an interruption of tasks that are not part of an ECS service here. So that's the way we make sure to try to not interrupt any running tasks as well. But we still are able to remove EC2 instances from the cluster to move them to other instances to shrink the capacity even more.
I'm not sure if you mentioned this. Maybe I just haven't realized it. but the if an instance like an ECS instance is set to draining, it doesn't only remove like the task and place them to other machines, it will also not accept new ones. So that's kind of a side effect as well.
Yeah, and basically it sends also a stop signal to the running tasks. So if you have placed a task, you have to make sure that the container basically handles that that stop signal coming from ECS, from the container agent. And then, for example, yeah, finishing up its work, storing its state and so on, and then terminates the process. If you have that in place, then that thing works very well. And we have a cluster running that way, where we have tasks that sometimes take up to 5 hours to complete, and it waits until those tasks have finished, and then it terminates the machine. So that works very well. So that's basically a big difference from the DIY autoscaling solution to the built-in cluster autoscaling, because we will remove instances with running tasks, but we will make sure to wait until they have completed. And if it's a service, the ECS service will make sure that those tasks get replaced with new services on the other machines in the cluster. So that's basically the benefits. So we have already mentioned a few limitations of the DIY autoscaling solution. I want to mention a few more. So we already said it only works for ECS services, because scaling out only works when we get that CloudWatch event, which is only coming from ECS services. That is one problem. The other thing is when we miss this event, this service task placement failure event, for example, I don't know, if because Lambda has a downtime, because I don't know, something is broken for some reason. If we miss that event and we are not triggering the autoscaling action, then our ECS cluster will get stuck. Because the problem with the CloudWatch event is the service sends it only once. So if the service cannot place the task, it sends the event. And then it waits forever and does not resend the event, for example. You get another event as soon as something has changed in your cluster. For example, if you launched a new EC2 instance, the service was able to create a new task, and it tries to add a second task and it fails again, then you will get a second event. But as long as the state doesn't change, you will not get another event. So basically, the one problem of the DIY solution is it's possible that you get stuck and that your cluster does not scale in circumstances, for example, where the Lambda function is not working correctly, or for some reason the CloudWatch event was not triggering or something like that. So it's possible. This is a possible failure that we are not covering here. And of course, the problem with a DIY solution is you have a DIY solution that you need to manage, to monitor, to optimize, to look for problems. So it adds complexity to your infrastructure, of course. So that's the downside that we have here. On the plus side, our solution supports rolling updates, because we do not use the termination protection at all. And it also tries to reduce the capacity in the cluster to a minimum. So it even replaces tasks if needed to do so. So I can maybe summarize that. So for ECS, with the cluster autoscaling mechanism that AWS announced last year, or with the DIY solution, we don't really get a perfect solution, I would say, for all scenarios. So maybe the cluster autoscaling feature will improve over time. And also I can think of improving the DIY solution a little bit as well. So for example, right now, after thinking about that whole topic a lot, I'm thinking about it could also be a good idea to mix the cluster autoscaling feature from AWS with a few Lambda functions that do draining and stuff of instances. So basically reschedule tasks on your own. So this could be another solution to the problem as well. But then you have the problem that it's not supported in CloudFormation, and it's basically hard to build that into a CloudFormation template. So that's why I haven't I haven't proceeded with that for the moment.
Okay, so I think we covered the ECS part. It's time to move on to EKS, Andreas.
Yes. So now we are switching a little bit. The topic stays the same. We still have to manage EC2 instances, but now for EKS. And for EKS, there is basically two things that we can use to make sure to automate the process of scaling and managing EC2 instances for our container cluster. And the first thing is called managed node groups. So this is a feature from AWS that is built into EKS. It basically, you can think of it, it's an integration of the autoscaling group into Kubernetes and EKS. So the managed node group uses an AMI that is optimized for EKS, and also it integrates the autoscaling group into the cluster. So it basically makes sure to create the autoscaling group in the correct way, and combine that with the Kubernetes cluster. So that's one aspect, the managed node group. The other aspect is basically a built-in Kubernetes feature, which is called Cluster Autoscaler. So the Cluster Autoscaler is not only available with EKS, you can use it when you run Kubernetes on other cloud providers as well. It's just it's a built-in feature in the open source solution. That's what I want to say. And the Cluster Autoscaler is a tool that also automatically adjusts the number of EC2 instances. And it does so in two different ways. So first of all, whenever there's a pod, so the pod is a group of containers. So basically the equivalent is an ECS task. So whenever the cluster could not schedule a pod because of insufficient resources, the cluster autoscaler will increase the number of EC2 instances automatically. So that's basically the way to scale out. To scale in, the cluster autoscaler constantly monitors the utilization of your EC2 instances. And as soon as there are nodes in the cluster that have been underutilized for, I think it's 15 minutes by default, but you can configure that, or it's 10 minutes, something like that, they will replace, move the pods on the machine, and then terminate that machine and remove that from the cluster. So that's basically the way to scale in again. So the cluster autoscaler basically implements the behavior that I would expect from cluster autoscaler. So it scales out automatically when it cannot place a new pod automatically. So we have a similar mechanism here. The pod stays in a provisioning state. So it waits basically until the cluster has launched a new EC2 instance in our case, and then it schedules the container on that machine. And the other way around works as well. So we have that mechanism that the cluster autoscaler tries to have as reduced the number of EC2 instances as much as possible. So it will replace pods if needed to achieve that goal. So that's a really cool thing here, which we have out of the box when using Kubernetes and the feature that is called Cluster Autoscaler. So to get the Cluster Autoscaler running, so this is basically a service that runs within your Kubernetes cluster. So to get that running on AWS, you have to configure EM role, IAM roles, you have to configure the authentication authorization within Kubernetes, so service accounts, granting them access to the IAM roles, stuff like that. So it's a lot to configure, but there are templates out there to do so. So it's not too complicated to do. Also, what is important here is the concept of disruption budgets in Kubernetes. So you can define disruption budgets for your pods, which means you can tell Kubernetes, I need a minimum of one pods for a specific deployment, specific service, under all circumstances. So that's basically how you tell the cluster, for example, the minimum number of pods that you need for, I don't know, the Redis database or your front end or whatever. The cluster autoscaler respects those disruption budgets. So when it moves containers, when it thinks about replacing containers, and even if the managed node group is doing an update of the Amazon machine image, all those things respect the disruption budgets. So that's basically the way you tell your cluster to have a certain amount of instance pods running so that it not causes any downtimes. Or those activities with scaling and also updating your cluster do not cause any downtime. So this is an important aspect that you need to think about. Yeah, so that's basically the cluster autoscaler. So I found it quite simple. So besides setting up the configuration with IAM and so on, I found it quite simple, and it was working very well so far in the project that I've been using it. And I'm really happy with that solution for managing my EC2 instances for my EKS cluster.
Okay, so that sounds good. And I think we are done, Andreas. So do we have a kind of summary, or what's the best way to finish this up here?
Yeah. So let me maybe summarize what we have been discussing so far. So first of all, I think, so what we learned now, managing EC2 instances can be a complex thing. So you have all kinds of complexity. So that is why use Fargate whenever possible. So really try to get rid of that infrastructure layer of virtual machines. You have containers, that's your new compute layer basically. Try to get rid of the virtual machines and use Fargate to outsource that problem to AWS. So that's the first thing I would recommend. The next thing is, I think at the moment, EKS with managed node groups and the cluster autoscaler is basically really the best way to manage a fleet of EC2 instances for your container cluster. Of course, using Kubernetes has its own story, so you have some advantages there. But if you only think about managing your EC2 instances for the cluster, I think AKS and Kubernetes has really implemented that in the best way possible. ECS, so we discussed the problems with the cluster autoscaling. That is the built-in feature that is coming from AWS. So basically the problem we have is it does not move containers to optimize cluster utilization because of their design goal to never interrupt a running task. So that could be a good thing for you, but probably it's a problem because you have always a little bit, or maybe even big, overcapacity in your cluster. The second problem with cluster autoscaling is they use that termination protection, and this breaks all kinds of rolling updates of your Amazon machine images, all kinds of infrastructure automation breaks, basically, when you have instances that are protected from termination. And we have also discussed the ECS DIY solution. So the problem here is that we are only able to scale out for services and not for standalone tasks in that scenario. So that's, I would say, the biggest downside of using that approach. Also, what is maybe interesting is the scale out delay. I haven't talked about that so far. So how long does it take until the autoscaling group adds a new instance to your cluster from the moment you try to launch a new container in your cluster? And the thing here is, with Fargate, with EKS, and with ECS DIY, the DIY solution, this is basically immediately. So this is event-driven. If the task cannot be scheduled, if the pod cannot be scheduled, it will immediately create a new instance. The ECS cluster autoscaling, there it takes a little bit longer because there's a CloudWatch metric involved. So you have to wait until a new data point shows up in the CloudWatch metric, and then it takes a little bit until The tracking policy notices the change, and so it takes, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes until the autoscaling group will start a new instance from the moment you tried to create your task. So this is another difference here that might be interesting to you. Yeah, so that's the summary and the comparison of the different ways of scaling your container clusters.
Okay, Andrea, so thank you very much for talking about different ways of scaling the underlying compute infrastructure for container clusters. So that was like lots of new things that I learned here, so thank you very much for that. I have one thing to add for our listeners. So if you are convinced that Fargate is the best option here, then we have something for you. Andreas and I released a book called Rapid Docker on AWS. And the goal of the book is that you take your application and you Dockerize the application, and then you spin it up on AWS using Fargate. And after that, you will add a deployment pipeline. So you get a, like, from an existing application to modernized, Dockerized application on AWS with a pipeline. You get everything with lots of examples, like PHP example, we have a Java example, we have a Ruby on Rails example, we have Python example. I think we have some other examples. So lots of examples that you can use to make sure that your application can be run on Fargate, even if it's not yet Dockerized at the moment. So if you're interested in this kind of adventure, then check out our book, Rapid Docker on AWS. You will find a link in the show notes. So with that announcement, I will hand it over to Andreas. And I think Andreas does his usual ending, where he asks for all kinds of favors from our listeners.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Michael, for mentioning the Rapid Docker on AWS book. And I have three more things before we close this episode. So first of all, thanks for listening. And we ask you, our listeners, please leave us a review on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps other people to find the Cloud on Out podcast. Also, please share this episode or the blog post that summarizes this episode on LinkedIn, Twitter, or wherever you have followers. And last but not least, don't forget to subscribe to the Cloud on Out podcast in your favorite podcast app and make sure you never miss the latest episode. So thanks a lot for listening. We will be back in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye. See you next time.